Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast, and Tony's dedication has come through, and we are podcasting in our normal time again.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so thanks. I know you guys went on a trip for Thanksgiving holiday, and I'm glad you can come back in time for a little podcasting action.
Right.
So, how was Thanksgiving? Was it good? Was it nice?
Yeah, we actually did our Thanksgiving at a Hofbräuhaus, so I had German food.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah. Did you have a pork knuckle? I know that's a very tasty...
I did not have a pork knuckle, but I have had pork knuckles and pork shoulders before in Germany and in Prague, and yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice.
Actually, here's a funny story. We were with our friends in Prague, and they're Czech, and it's a lady and her husband. And anyway, he ordered like the pork shoulder, and so did I. Now, this pork shoulder comes with like the skin on it, and it's like roasted. And the skin is not just tough and kind of greasy, but it's got some things on it, like hair. Okay, it's just not, yeah. It's like skin, you know, they make it really like fresh. And we were sitting there eating it, and he took a knife and he cut the skin off and he rolled it up on a fork and he started eating it.
Oh no!
Screamed. No, don't do that in front of our friends. He didn't really speak English, so she screamed at him in Czech and then translated it and screamed at him again. And he has a big smile on his face and he just took another bite.
So this guy definitely was not. He knew exactly what he was doing. Was it an accident or? That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh yeah. Well, Thanksgiving here was pretty good. It was pretty nice, pretty low key. You know, we didn't travel anywhere. Just stayed home with our family, and that was about it. It was pretty nice. Pretty nice time. So pretty cool. Pretty cool.
But I do have to say that because of your enthusiasm for buying beer, I actually put time into the beer choice.
Oh, are we shifting to what are you drinking?
Well, I just want you to know that I'm ready tonight.
Okay. All right.
I'm ready.
Okay, so here we go.
What am I drinking?
Okay, what am I drinking? I'll go first because what I'm drinking is just ice water. Just right out of the tap. Yeah, yeah.
What's going on, Patrick?
Well, it was Thanksgiving holiday, so what we did is we bought some nice wine. We bought a few bottles of nice wine, and we enjoyed those, and we just didn't feel the need to go out and buy any beer or anything. So it's with the heat on, it dries out the house, and so having something wet and cool is refreshing. So Indiana tap water, which is terrible, by the way. I can't imagine. Now, I don't know about the water in Jackson, but I went to university in Memphis, and I even worked in Little Rock. So that's like the same Mid-South area for the people who are not. Those are all fairly close to each other. And the water in Memphis and water in Little Rock was great. I mean, just fantastic. And I would imagine that the water in Jackson would be pretty good. But I don't know. Is it good? Right out of the tap, is it good?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry to hear that.
No. In fact, we actually live in the Jackson city limits, and we have boil water advisories all the time.
Oh, wow. You have terrible water. Jeez. Yeah.
This is one of these things that bothers me, and it's a problem in our education system. And it's something that you've probably heard me mention a million times.
Okay.
I firmly believe that the level of technology competence within our students is lower than it was in 2004, 2005.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've heard you talk
because
about this.
We have the generation, and, you know, I think I always say they skipped the laptop or they skipped the desktop, but they didn't just skip that. They skipped the hardware. They skipped a lot of things. They skipped building. They skipped learning how things work. And it's a very consumer-driven, app-driven environment where a tiny, you know, I was watching this the Netflix documentary, I forget what it's called, where they taught the guy who was previously at Facebook talks about how Facebook uses the algorithm to, you know, get people fired up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Engagement, yeah, or something like that.
So, like, the engagement group. Worldwide, that's 50 people. That's what he referenced. He said there were... Now, I don't know if that's true, but he says in the video, there's basically 50 people making all these decisions for the planet. That's the problem. Those 50 people, I promise you, were the ones who took things apart, put them back together, and learned how things worked. Everybody else, the other billion people, they're just consuming. And so what happens? This is what happens at our water plant. Okay, these things bother me because I really think that a group of people working on them probably could come up with a better idea to fix them, but there's probably just not enough people to do it. So what happens at the water plant is that they have issues with water pressure, and when that happens, they don't get enough pressure to filter the water.
Oh, so oh, okay.
Have you ever noticed, like, a water filter, when you put water through a water filter, the stream of water is narrowed, and it's forced through the filter, and filters work different ways. Some of them, like, I think they, like, attract particles to pull things out. Some of it's direct cleaning through, like, some type of carbon or coal, and it comes out the other end, but you need a lot of pressure to push it through. So without that pressure, you can't actually filter the water, and that's why we get these boil water advisories, because they have a breakdown there. That seems like a mechanical breakdown. That seems like a sensor breakdown. That seems like there must be a better way to do this. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think there's enough engineers to put a solution together that's affordable. And I don't think there's enough prototyping. And we can get into that later. But when I talk about the STEM thing. But there's just not enough of all those things in place for people to solve these problems. And I think there used to be. And so before I rant anymore, I will tell you that I'm drinking a Spaten premium lager.
Oh, I'm a Spaten. That's out of...
it's a German lager.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's Munich. It's Munich.
Yeah, and for people who are not... Munich has laws around the beer, like strict on how it can be made, not like how it can be sold, but how it can be made. It has very strict laws of. Let me see here.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. I'm trying to find a link for it, and I'm just finding it here.
It's a pretty normal, you know, looking beer. I buy it at Whole Foods, so. I'm sure you could too, Patrick.
Yeah. There is a yes, yes. I've definitely seen this. Let's see here. I'm just trying to find the webpage for it. I don't want to put like a. That's Wikipedia.
Also, I have some other news.
Yeah, please. Yep.
I'm going to post this now. Months ago, a publication reached out to me and asked if I would like to do some tech writing for them. I'm just pasting it in here. And I said, yes, yeah. So I wrote an article and I want to do like a regular article, and they're out of the UK, and they just didn't get back to me. So I'm like, oh, maybe they're not open. You know, maybe they're not going to like open, and you know, maybe they just whatever, but it's called the International Schools Network. And my first article is up.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah. And it's called "It's Time to Stop Telling Children to Google It." So I demonstrate in the article how different search engines produce different results, and you have to have a balanced approach if you're going to teach students how to do research, especially if you want them to research current events.
I love that. Yeah, yeah.
So I posted it. Google will probably shut down my Gmail, and I won't be able to communicate anymore in the next 48 hours, but I didn't blame Google for anything, really. It's just, you know, it's their business model. They got to do what they've got to do. So you don't have to just trust them. There's lots of other ways to get information. So I'm not saying Google's bad. I'm just saying It's not like saying, hey, use a Kleenex. If you tell somebody to Google it, they're going to use one product to get all their information, and that's
yep.
a problem.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yep. Yep. Always a problem.
Yep.
All right. Very cool. I've got that in the show notes for anybody who wants. It's a link to the article. And yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll keep an eye on that. And anytime you got anything new, you know, just bring it up, Tony. Now it says it's a server error. What?
Great.
That's fantastic. What did I do wrong? I did something wrong.
Come on, Patrick.
I don't know.
I hope it works. I posted it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, there it is. I accidentally had added a letter. At the very end here. Hold on here. At the URL. I'm working on it. There we go. I think I have fixed it. Oh, there we go. There it is. Nice.
Boom.
I love it. That's good. That's a great article. Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Good review, sir.
Yeah, good luck. Ooh, all right. So, speaking of... you said you had an epiphany about a STEM space in your school.
Well,
and we talked a little bit about it on last week on our show before the break, and
so I'm trying to solve a problem. And the problem is that as the chief technology officer, I'm not in charge of the curriculum.
Yep.
And I have very little influence over the schedule. Now, previous jobs I've had a lot of influence over the schedule, and I worked sometimes for months to develop new schedules to open up different opportunities for kids. Like, for example, when I was in Dubai, I worked with the elementary school to create, it was almost 120 minutes a week for grade 4 kids to do robotics out of their, before they had 80 minutes, and I got that up to 120. Working with the existing schedule and looking at things that can be moved around. And when I was in China, I did something really similar where we made it possible for entire grade levels to have project time once a month for up to 4 hours. So the grade level, the whole like grade 4, all of them, or the grade 5s, like whatever, they would have the entire floor would just be for a project. So the tech people would plan this project. In the weekly 40-minute tech block, they would start teaching the skills, and then the kids would have 4 hours in all in one go to work together. And they didn't have to work in their cohort. They could just work. The teachers could pair them up, mix them around, whatever they wanted to do. And I actually got that idea from a super smart dude who ran our athletic department, who did the same thing with he called it team sports. And so he would get the entire grade out to play like some kind of intramural type sport together at the elementary school level, like once every 2 weeks, instead of them just doing boring like PE stuff. So I've had a lot of experience with scheduling, and STEM is tough and makerspaces are tough because they don't fit into the normal block, and they don't fit into a normal department, and they require a lot of equipment, supervision, and space. So I am looking at ways to build these spaces in places where kids are already at. So when they're hanging out where they're normally at, like for study hall and stuff, they can actually work on things of interest. And there's usually adults there because they're like being supervised, or it's in a space that's just got a lot of natural supervision. So I'm just working on this concept of STEM, you know, it just needs a non-traditional space in a school. And sometimes I find that schools are really limiting because they have too much tradition, basically. Like classrooms all kind of look the same. Yep. You know, most classrooms today look exactly like they did when I started doing this, like in 2005. So they look exactly the same. They have the same limitations. The furniture's not correct. The power's not correct. There's not enough storage. Like, all of these things are problematic. So trying to always put a STEM space in a classroom seems to just be ridiculous. The majority of people need a normal classroom, so you also can't make every room a STEM room. Now, that concept was how they set up the high school in Korea. So the first day I got to Korea and I was able to actually get into this building that had been under construction, I noticed that every single room looked like a laboratory. There were pipes coming up for gas and water. Like, you could put like 8 sinks in any room if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I was really confused. I'm like, you know, this isn't going to work. And the guy who's running the school, he's like, listen, it's easy to turn a room into an English classroom. It is impossible to turn a room into a science lab after school opens. And we don't know in the future what rooms we want to be labs. So every room can be a lab if we want it to be.
Okay.
All right. I was like, okay, that's like way smarter. That's just so much smarter. Build for the most difficult room. And then the stuff that you don't want, you just cover it up.
Yep.
Like, you can patch over the pipes, put a fitting over them so nobody can see it. You can put normal tables in. You don't have to have science tables. You can tuck away the power up in the ceiling, but it's all there and ready to be used like whenever you need it. So that was a brand new building though. And it was built with a great deal of thought. And it was a whole campus that was built that way. Whereas most schools in the US, I mean, especially good schools, they've been around, most of them, for a long time. The buildings are generational. I mean, you have buildings from like the 40s, the 50s, the 70s, the 80s. Like, they just, you know, and there's different building standards. There were different building codes. There's just different everything. So it's just really hard to go into a space and say, I want to make this a STEM room, or I want to make this room for laser cutting or 3D printing. It just doesn't work. So I think what schools need to do if they want to get into this is they need to find, and I think it's pretty simple. They need to find a big space. It has to be fairly big. So I would say if you think about your normal classroom, I don't know how big your classrooms are, but...
Oh, they vary. They vary.
So let's say a normal classroom that can hold, like, maybe can comfortably hold like 20 students. You need something about twice that size. So it needs to be able to comfortably hold about 40 students. It needs to have natural supervision. That means you're not assigning someone there to do STEM. It's just that there's already people there. So like a library, a study hall area, even something around the athletic center where there's coaches everywhere and adults. It doesn't matter if the space was initially planned for it. It just needs to have these like kind of characteristics. And there does need to be, electricity, but usually a room that big has plenty of outlets. That's what I found. I mean, it just happens naturally. Like, if you have a room that can handle 40 plus human beings, there's usually enough power to make things work. And so that's kind of like the core requirement. And then once you get that requirement, you should plan the learning around what can work. So for example, we have two different buildings. One of them can easily run and hold a laser cutter. The other one cannot. So we don't try to put a laser cutter where it can't go.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to put a hole in the building. We're not going to be able to safely monitor it. The other one is fine. And it has a perfect spot for like a big laser cutter. However, it doesn't have the place where you put the laser cutter. It doesn't really have the option for a lot of hand tools, like power tools and things like that. So how about you do laser cutting and 3D printing at one location, which serves a certain number of kids at a certain grade level, and the other location is a different grade level. So as they matriculate up, it's like, okay, you were laser printing and you're 3D printing. That's great. Now we're actually going to build. We've got some Dremels. We've got some raw materials that we're going to cut. Maybe you could have a small laser cutter to make some nice little cool finishing things, but nothing big. And the students, if they've learned laser cutting at a younger age and you're in the same school, all you really need to do is make a plan to take those kids to laser cut like once every 3 weeks. They don't have to laser cut every day. Laser cutting's fast. 3D printing is super slow.
Yeah.
So like you can 3D print anywhere, but if you've got a bunch of 3D printers set up in one location, theoretically, you could run 3D printing projects for your whole campus. It's just slow. Like you could centralize it all and say, okay, send that over to the 3D printing lab and they'll run it. Until kids are pretty old, they can't really manage materials like 3D printing materials. So an adult has to do that anyway. So you're really just talking about making it possible for kids to submit models that get printed. All right. So we had a little technical difficulty. So Patrick, yeah. I'm not going to try to pick everything up. All I'm saying is that we need some non-traditional spaces to make this stuff work. And we shouldn't just try to force STEM into every space. And I think if you have an open mind and you set things up that work, that aren't resistant in the environment, that kids will gravitate and work on projects. I have always found that kids think most of the stuff is interesting, and it can be as simple as paper folding and origami, or it can be as complicated as building robots.
Yep. Out of metal.
Out of metal.
Out of metal.
Or carbonite. Okay.
Carbonite, wow.
Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
I think my
it's
parents...
It's just a dream, Patrick.
My parents had a phone out of carbonite. Oh, no, that wasn't carbonite. That was a... Bakelite. They had a phone out made with Bakelite. Carbonite, it's Han Solo, right?
That's right.
Oh, okay.
But maybe we could start working with Bakelite. I need to look into that. Good idea, Patrick.
All right. Hey, I'm full of them. I'm full of them. I like the idea, Tony, but so what's tricky about that? I'm just not trying to poop on your parade or anything.
Throw it out.
Space is always a huge deal in school, and finding a space that holds 40 students and equipment is going to be tough for a lot of schools without maybe doing a little bit of construction. And I'm talking about just tearing down the wall between two classrooms and making it kind of a space there. The natural supervision is also a tricky one. I think the plentiful electricity, I think that's very doable even on older buildings, like to add that. And you can get creative with that too. I've seen pictures. I've never seen them in person where they had like the equipment on the against the walls. Like they had big equipment against the wall, so getting to the plugs was not very accessible without running extension cords. And so what they did is they put power in the ceiling. And then they have these, and they make these extension cords, which are tension-based, and they actually are meant to hang from the ceiling. And so you can actually pull down what you need, like over a work table. And then when you're done, you just kind of like pull on it, and it sends it back up. But again, you're dealing with older kids here who are a little bit more responsible and aren't going to turn on a power drill and tape down the trigger and then send it back up. But the natural supervision, I think that's the really the tricky one too. Because teachers, as you know, Tony, don't like extra duties.
No, they hate them.
They absolutely hate them. So if they're already on, say, like after school duty, and then you go, you know what, you got this planning time, your space is right next to that space. Why don't you do after school duty and you're going to be in there too. Like they hate that because they have so little free time during the day. Most teachers that they really despise extra duties. So I like the idea, and I like that it's a non-traditional space where students can kind of just gravitate and come and work on projects. I think that's great. I don't think there's a grade associated with it. I think that's wonderful. That's definitely the right way to go, because we want to foster a love of this stuff. We don't, you know, we don't want to. If we tie a grade to it, I think it feels too much like a job.
Yeah, that's true.
Or a task that has to be completed, whether they want to or not. Or,
And it shouldn't.
No, it shouldn't. It should be something that's creative and fun and a way to collaborate and bounce ideas off one another and solve problems and try new and cool things. So I like it. We have a STEM space in our school, and it's kind of struggled to find its identity. Every few years, it seems like that we're trying to push teachers into that space. You know what the biggest thing that teachers say they don't use the space? You want to know the biggest reason why, Tony?
There's no printer in there.
No, it's just they said what the so we're an elementary school, preschool to middle school, and the middle school teachers, and all the teachers, they're like, we have the supplies we need in our room, Like, right. We have, if we want to do origami, why do we have to go to that space to do it? We can do that in our room.
Right.
It
doesn't really make sense unless you're going to mix students.
Yeah.
If you're just working with cohorts in a room, in their classroom, then a smarter setup would be to have equipment that the teachers can easily use when they need it and store somewhere when they don't.
Yeah.
But if you have students that you want to work and you want to mix their cohort, or you would like multiple students from the same grade level, like multiple cohorts to work at the same time, like let's say you want two or three homerooms to collaborate on a project, then they probably do need a common space to do that in. Not every day, but sometimes.
Yeah. And I also think it's good for students to get out of their classroom every now and again,
Houston, the MIT Fab Lab in Houston, they had a fab truck.
Oh.
And schools could book it. It was about, I don't know, it was like $1,200 a day. And the way that that worked is the truck would pull up. It had its own generators if it couldn't plug in. It had all the equipment on it. The students would have been working ahead of time with their teachers on projects, and this truck would just pull up, and then the kids would come onto the truck with their files and 3D print, laser cut, vinyl print, like whatever they needed. They had like a small CNC machine, I think. They could cut metal and wood. And they would have a couple of people there to help the kids. But they would just do all their work ahead of time, and that was it. And so the truck was really just the final bit after all the planning and software work had been done in the classroom. So that model is very attractive in some ways if you have the logistics to deliver that around your campus. If you could build something like that that could be delivered, where kids could work independently, work with their teachers, but then as a full grade level come out and say, all right, let's get our models together. We're going to like cut all this stuff up and then sit down and assemble it. And we have a couple of people here who know how to do everything, and they're going to help. And then at that point, it's a normal day for the teachers, but they're not actually planning any additional lessons. They're just finishing a project.
Yeah. That's cool. I've never heard of the fab truck. That's a new model.
Fab truck.
That's pretty sweet. Yep. All right, Tony.
There are solutions, people.
There are. Just got to get creative.
Don't give up.
Be like Rudy. So,
here is a homemade DIY fab truck I'm going to send to you from the Netherlands.
Oh, all right.
This thing is awesome looking.
Yeah.
It looks almost like a food truck. It's, I don't know. Hold on. Did you say like Rudy?
Yeah, like the Notre Dame.
Yeah, that dude is annoying.
I've never heard him talk.
Yeah, that guy came to my college when I was like in college.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, and I always had like just a lot of thoughts about the whole Rudy story. Like, it's great, it's fine, but like, you know,
it's definitely been Hollywood eyes.
I don't know. I'm not going to say it. It'll just make people mad.
Well, no. So I'll say it for you. Did you know that when Rudy was a senior, Joe Montana was the Notre Dame quarterback? I don't know if you knew that. They don't really make a big deal about that in the movie. I don't even think they mention Joe Montana.
No, they don't.
But Joe Montana, famous NFL quarterback, Hall of Famer, and he was on a radio show, and they were asking him about that, and he goes, yes it happened. He goes, but Rudy wasn't this inspirational linchpin of the team that the movie makes him out to be. And that it's not like everybody at Notre Dame knew who Rudy was. Like, nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew who he was, and they started chanting his name kind of as a joke. And he goes, there's so many things. He goes, it's Hollywood, and they made a great story. He goes, but you take it with a big grain of salt, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, and in the movie, like, his parents were never able to go see a Notre Dame game until he was on the team. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
If it was like all you wanted to do in your whole life and you could drive there.
Yeah.
Why not just say, you know, it's a little expensive, but in 3 years, I'd really like to go. Let's buy our tickets in advance. I'm sure you could have done that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of ways they could have gotten tickets. Plenty of ways. Yeah. Anyway, so, it's good. You know, it's a good Hollywood. It's a good Hollywood story. You know,
I heard Rudy speak in real life, and I was like, what's going on here? You're the kid from the movie.
What's my talking about?
Anyway, so
you have a topic here.
Yeah.
Favorite winter movie.
Yeah.
Students.
Yeah. Yeah. Movie. Yeah. So we got 3 weeks left, Tony. Our school, at least, it's about 3 weeks until we go to winter break. And usually what happens is those 3 weeks are just packed with stuff. Like, we've got concerts, we've got basketball games, it's just packed. We have so much going on in those 3 weeks. So by the time we get to that Friday before break, teachers, students, everybody is just worn down. Everybody's a little tired, and it's not uncommon for the teacher to have kind of a winter holiday party before the break. And for like the last
out of touch with movies for young kids to show. Like, I'm completely out of touch.
Well, we can talk about any movies we'd like to show, but can't. We can talk about anything, even classics. You know, like, I saw some teacher showing The Great Pumpkin by Charlie Brown, The Great Pumpkin. And I don't know if you've seen that recently, but it does not hold up very well. It doesn't hold up very well. And there are better choices out there to entertain your kids.
You're talking to somebody who believes one of the best Christmas movies ever made was Die Hard.
It is a Christmas movie. It is a Christmas movie.
Whenever I have like a Christmas movie party, I show Die Hard, and people are like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "It is a Christmas movie, and it's a great movie.
it is a great movie. Possibly Bruce Willis's greatest movie, but that's a whole other thing.
To get home for Christmas,
he's fighting. Basically. Yeah,
he's fighting.
He just wants to see his kids.
And, yes, yeah. That's all. It's really what the movie's about. You know, yeah. He happens to have a different way to go about it.
Yeah. So, it's awesome. I don't know.
I love the movie Elf. I don't know what age appropriate level that movie's at, but I love Elf with Will Ferrell. It's hilarious.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think any Frosty the Snowman would be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
For little kids. If you want to put the kids to sleep, 7 years in Tibet.
Is that a Christmas? Is that a holiday movie? Is it?
Well, there's snow in it.
Well, that's true, but there's also, I think.
They're communists. Like, you know, they attack and everything, and so they don't celebrate Christmas. But
no.
There is snow in the movie.
It is.
You could argue that there's ice skating. I mean, those are Christmas things. So, but it will put the kids to sleep, so that's a good one.
What about Home Alone? What about Home Alone?
Yeah,
The first one. Yeah.
Yeah. Home Alone's good.
Yeah.
And what about the Santa Claus with Tim Allen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Santa Claus. Yeah, with the E at the end. That's pretty good. That's a good one. That holds up pretty well because it's all about, belief and everything.
Santa with Billy Bob Thornton.
No, don't. You may lose your job if you put
up. You lose your job. You don't think, it has Santa in it. No.
No, that is getting called before the school board, or your principal at the very least, and being put on administrative leave. Yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah, I mean, A Christmas Story, I think, with Ralphie is like, I think you just make people watch that.
It's good, but you got to be careful because the kid wants a gun for Christmas, even though it's a BB gun, right? And the parents are like, "No, you can't. You're going to shoot your eye out." But he
gets punished for it.
He almost shoots his eye out.
Yeah, he does. And then, of course, there's Christmas Vacation, which I watch every year.
It's great. It's definitely not appropriate for the classroom. No. But boy, it is a great. This is probably the best Chevy Chase movie.
It's outstanding.
It is fantastic.
But, yeah. And then, I don't know, I'm sure there's loads of Disney movies I'm not even thinking about.
Oh yeah, I mean you'll see Frozen because that has to do because it's in like the north and then you know it's like the north. It's like in, you know it's like up in the Norway area kind of a thing. At least fictionally, that's where it feels like where there's lots of snow and it's cold and everybody loves it. And let's see what else. Yeah, gosh, I'm drawing
that Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh no, that's a terrible movie. Look, I mean, it's okay.
It's a terrible movie.
Okay, here it is. Here's the premise. He works at a company, and all this money disappears. All this money. I think he works at a bank, and all right. These people's money disappears, and he's going to kill himself. He goes right. onto a bridge, and then an angel comes, and I don't know. But at the end of the movie, you don't know what happened to the money. You don't need like all these people, their money is gone. It's Christmas. They can't make their house payment. They're going to lose their home. And he is responsible for this. Like it's that area. It's just not resolved. It's I don't know. It's a little depressing. I think kids nowadays would be like, well, what happened with the money? Like what's going to, I mean,
we need a resolution on this. what's going on? There's the classic Rudolph movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the classic Rudolph and Frosty movies, I think have good music.
They do.
The songs are very good.
Yeah.
What is it? Burl Ives.
Burl Ives, yeah, yeah. Good, yeah, really good music and good animation for the time. And what about the Grinch?
I think the Grinch is good. This would be interesting. It would be interesting to this would be amazing. Show the old Grinch normally, like on your screen, then get a set of Class VR, have them watch the Grinch in VR, like simulated. And then see if they react to it differently. Like, was it more intense with this like 100-inch kind of virtual screen surrounding them versus just watching it, you know, from your seat? That would be good if you want to do a little research.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
you could show the old Grinch next to like the Jim Carrey Grinch, like back, you know, like one day the old Grinch, the next day the Jim Carrey, and have the kids write about the differences in the movie, how it made them feel, if the themes were the same. So I think you could make this into a lesson. That way, if someone's like, why are you showing movies? Like, I'm not. This is a lesson.
Yeah. And the original Grinch, that's like 20 minutes long. And the Jim Carrey movie, it's, you know, it's 90 minutes long. It's full minutes.
Yeah.
So, and they made another animated version with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Whoa. Yeah, I'm just out of touch, man. I'm out of touch with Christmas movies. I gotta get back in touch.
That's okay. Like,
my child actually recognizes Christmas now.
Oh.
Last year he didn't, but this year he does. So
there it is. This.
Yeah, I'm pulling up some just a list here. Gremlins.
Oh my gosh, that is a Christmas movie. Yeah.
Oh, and I forgot about another movie I actually watch every season. Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Oh,
not for kids.
Not for kids, but boy, that is a good Bill Murray. It's like they just turned Bill Murray loose. I mean,
they did. They just turned him loose, and it was great.
He is. I saw that in the theater. I can't believe that. Man, I'm getting old.
And on that same, you know, on that same thread, if you have not watched What About Bob lately? You need to.
All right.
It doesn't just hold up. I was bent over laughing. Like, and I knew everything that was going to happen, and I just laughed so hard in that movie.
I'm going to have to check it out.
That scene where he's sailing, I just love that. Like, yeah. And when he's eating, and he's like, they're like, do you want some more salad? And he's like, I think so. Pilot high and deep. I mean, again, they just turned him loose. For sure. They just turned him loose.
All right.
What's this Kirk Douglas movie? The Christmas Chronicle?
Oh, I don't. I think that's a new one. Oh, no. Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
Not Michael Douglas.
No, Kirk Douglas. It kind of looks like.
Oh, geez.
Like Kenny Rogers or something.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. All yep. right. Well, I think we've given people no resolution to this question. So,
but lots of ideas, yeah, lots of places to start their research.
Probably writing down every single good movie we missed.
So, yeah. Yep. Leave it in the comments. What movies you'd like you watch with your kids in your classroom. All right. Anyway, Tony, I think that's it. I think we've exhausted it.
Yeah, we have.
All right. So for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.